for me as I think about it, I think it goes back to this practice of the presence of God. It's like you're reminding yourself, however you need to do it, that God is near in every circumstance, a realization that God is present and that you're okay.
I'm excited. One of my favorite guests we ever get, Dr. Janine Hanger. Thank you for being on the podcast. I love having you on, but I also love having the speaker who spoke on Sunday. You spoke the previous Sunday because I'm able to get a little bit more depth. You can kind of talk about things you maybe didn't mention, things that you had to leave on the cutting room floor, the deleted scenes of your sermon, so to speak. And speaking of movies, speaking of deleted scenes, you started your message with the idea of spoilers. Mm-hmm. And I am very excited about the idea of spoilers. And I want to know how you feel. I don't know if you really tipped your hat at all to how you feel about spoilers. Have you ever had anything spoiled for you that ruined an experience? Or have you ever spoiled something for someone to ruin their experience?
That is a good question. It'll take me some time to think of it.
While you're thinking, let me tell you my spoiler story.
Yes, please.
I will not name this person, not because I think they listen to the podcast, but I just think it's bad form. So when I was a junior in high school, I was in physics. Uh-huh. And I sat next to this girl that, if I'm being completely honest, I did not like, and she did not like me either. And she was so obnoxiously annoying, specifically to me. And I think it was because I was younger than her. She was a senior, I was a junior, and she was reading Twilight. And the last Twilight book, I think, had just come out, or a Twilight book had just come out. Mm-hmm. And I was so frustrated with her and how she acted towards me. One day I said, if you make me mad one more time, I will find out how Twilight ends and I will tell you.
Oh.
And she did. And so I used this service, Cha-Cha. Do you know what Cha-Cha is? It's like pre-Google. Before smartphones, you couldn't Google things on like your little flip phone. So you would text a number, Cha-Cha. I think it was 242-242, I believe. And you would say, hey, Cha-Cha, blah, 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 blah. And so I said, hey, Cha-Cha, how does Twilight end? Told me. And I said, this is what happens. And I mean, it was like, I told her the moon landing was fake. It was like her whole entire personality was predicated on Twilight. And she irked me so much that I threatened her and I made good on the threat. So whenever people talk about spoilers, specifically like who likes spoilers? I'm like, I love spoilers because I will think about that time where I spoiled blank's life. So have you ever done that to anybody? Have you ever been as mean as I am?
Maybe not on purpose, but... That's a good way to get to someone.
I think it's evil. I think I did an evil thing.
I don't know. I can't think of spoilers for me, but you know, the thing that's popping into my mind is actually Garrick when he doesn't want to know the end of a game.
Okay.
And he like has to go out in public, or I don't know if he's preaching on a Sunday and there's a game happening. He's like, don't tell me, you know, and he tries to avoid media the whole way until he gets to the place where he can watch it. And then a lot of the times I'll find out what happens. And then I really try hard not to tip my hat about the outcome. I try not to say much.
But you end up saying something?
Yeah. I give it away. I have done it without meaning to.
We had one time, we were doing some event. It was during Coastline and it was like a game or something. And for some reason, Megan knew what happened and she said, hey, da, da, da. And Garrick was like, I was recording that one. And of all people, her spoiling, I thought that was so funny. But then you say that and I totally can see him. I know I've seen that happen where he's like, don't tell me what happens. But a sports game's harder than a movie.
It is. That's true.
I think it'd be funny. I've told friends in the past, it'd be a funny bit to try to not see who won the presidential election. Ooh, as long as you can. Oh. So spoilers for you, do they ruin a story?
They used to, as I shared, like they used to, and now I do. I will, if a movie starts, like if Garrick and I are watching a movie or a show, mostly a movie, and it's like a Friday night and he puts on some movie, and if I start to get stressed out, I just go to Wikipedia.
Really?
I do.
Okay, so is it any type of movie?
Usually suspenseful ones, and especially, I don't know, just, dark ones, suspenseful ones, not like comedic ones. Sometimes true stories I need to know, like, you know, I just need to know ahead of time.
Doesn't feel like a spoiler when it's a true story. It's like, oh, this happened.
Yeah,
I should know.
Yeah, this happened, so we should just see how it plays out.
Exactly,
but
I can't get into spoilers.
Yeah,
I
didn't
the
used
surprise.
To be. Yeah.
What do you think happened? Just, it's too stressful to not know.
Yeah, I just made a decision. Like, I think what's happening is that it is, you know, Friday night and I want to relax and I'm invested in the story and it's too stressful. I mean, that's just it.
Yeah, I don't feel that. And I think that that's a really interesting way to tie it into your sermon from this past week, because you had said, you know, we don't get that with life. You can't really spoil the end. And I was wondering, do you know that Billy Graham quote where he's like, I've read the last page of the Bible. I know it all works out.
I'm not familiar with that quote.
Okay. Well, I think it's a funny quote also because like the joke is the last page of your Bible is usually like weights and measures or like a map or something. It's not.
That's right.
But I guess my question to kind of launch us into your sermon is where do you go in scripture for that feeling of like, oh, I know it's all going to be okay in the end?
I mean, there's a lot of places. I mean, John 15, I think for sure now can be that. I think where I go is, and I think it'll come in the context of if I'm anticipating something bad happening, the bottom might fall out on whatever, I kind of go back to like, listen, you're okay. It's going to be okay. My mantra, it's going to be okay. It's just going to be okay. That helps me daily.
Yes. Oh, probably hourly.
Yeah.
Because I have similar things that I do. When you were, I guess, younger or maybe not as far along in your Christian journey, how many steps was it between the feeling of the bottom falling out and going to scripture?
More steps than now, for sure.
Yeah. And I feel like that's probably where most people are.
Yeah.
How did you reduce the steps, I guess?
I mean, it all goes into this entire topic. I think that a continual reflection on who God is and where he is, like in terms of God loves us. He's with me, like his presence means everything to me. Just thinking about like he is near, that has a quieting effect for me.
Yeah,
personally,
I love that. I also love the idea that comes both experientially in relationship and comes from like sitting in the Word to remind yourself of these truths. And I think that's something that you brought up. You talked about Exodus. You talked about the burning bush, which we just preached about in youth group a couple weeks ago, and the idea that God introduces himself to Moses and he does it by rooting himself in the history that Moses knows. I am the God of your father, Abraham and Isaac, right? So I am always struck by people's stories of when God kind of introduces himself to people. And so in your life, Janine, if you don't mind, is there a moment you can think of where God had introduced himself to you in a unique way where that set a new pattern of surrender in your life?
Yeah. I mean, I have like snapshots throughout my life, so I can maybe share a couple.
Please.
So I think I had a really young one. I have this memory of either it was like fourth or fifth grade Sunday school. I've shared this in the podcast.
I like this story.
Yeah, where I was just in a Sunday school class and we were given a Bible reading thing and it was literally like sticker stars on my, I was aiming for the stars. You know, I want the stickers because I'm an achiever. I'm a performer, which is connected to my story. And so, but I found myself really taken with the Gospel of John, which I think that's what we had made the connection, like, oh my goodness, it was the Gospel of John all along, which ended up being what I researched, but it came alive to me in a new way. And I have a memory of being, this is going to sound wild, out on a field at my elementary school during lunch recess. And my friends and I used to pick those little flowers and make little necklaces. Yeah. And I think I was just out there and I just had this sense of like, God is near. And I would like pray to him out on the field while walking around by myself.
That's awesome.
I had lots of friends too. I was playing tetherball and all that, but I would have these conversations with him, you know, as like a fourth or fifth grader. Not all the time, but I just have a memory of being out on the field and having this sense of him being near.
Well, there's a parable very similar to that of going and finding God's love in a field, right?
Yeah.
I just love that. And I think that's a really interesting connection of not only was that an experience, but you can find something similar to that in scripture.
Yeah.
And speaking of scripture, you preached out of the Gospel of John this past Sunday, and we'll talk all about your message. But I'm really wondering from a pragmatic standpoint, when Coastline comes to you and says, hey, we want you to preach, do they say you have to preach out of the Gospel of John because we know you're really like an expert in it? Or are you like, that's just comfortable ground for me? Or did you think, oh, finally I can talk about John 15?
No, you know, Garrick was like, and guess what the passage is? It's John 15. And I have to tell you, my honest initial response was like, again?
Yeah.
Like,
I'm just wondering, do you feel like that bell gets rung all of the time?
A little bit, yeah. I love it so much and it comes easy to me, but there is the part of me that's like, I should probably get experience in some other places too.
They'll have you preach on like Habakkuk next time
and
you're going to be on the podcast. Like, I wish it was John.
Yeah.
I did not want to go back.
I didn't want to learn
into
that
so deep.
Yeah.
So in another thing, just pragmatically speaking, and I didn't want to give you these ones beforehand because I'm interested in kind of your gut reaction. Your sermon was very organized. You're like, these are the four questions we're going to answer. Mm-hmm. And you're like, number one, number two, number three, number four. Is that normally how you process information? Or is that you saw the message, you saw the point, and you're like, oh, I got to organize it in this way?
Yeah, that's not normally how I would come together with the message. I think I've I don't know if I have a system, but I was, I really think that was from the Lord. Mm-hmm. Like as I was preparing it, just these four questions just materialized. And I thought, what if I just organize it according to these four questions?
I'm fascinated with how people prepare messages mm-hmm. and how people prepare sermons. I've mm-hmm. always wanted to start a sub podcast called Inside the Pastor's Studio, where I talk to people about their, the way that they frame messages. And I thought yours was really interesting because it's like 1, 2, 3, 4
yeah.
academic, but also you strung it together in a theological way with imagery and a lot of water we were talking yeah. before. Like, oh, I thought that was very interesting. And then yeah. obviously chocolate syrup. I resonated with that mm-hmm. quite a bit, but to think about you organizing it in that way, I'm wondering what work did you have to do to get your brain to be able to do that type of sermon?
Yeah, I mean, I think it was a long time of reflecting. You spend the time in the text reflecting on the text, what it means in its context, and you know that like you're not going to be talking about all of those connections. I think you have to shift to that point of like, what is the takeaway? I don't know, it's not a great word, but like, what is the pressure point for how does this actually connect? And then trying to think of like, now how does this connect for people, for me, for others in our community? Like how, trying to find those connection points, I think.
So the connection points, and I think the connection point for all the questions was clearly this idea of surrender.
Yeah.
And from your perspective, what do you think it is that gets in the way the most of people surrendering to God?
I think control, which I think I yeah. started off with. I think just we don't like to be out of control. And surrender is a letting go. When I think of surrender, I think of letting go. And when you step forward in faith too, I mean, I think it, you have to let go of a certain measure of like knowing all of the things and having everything kind of in place.
And it's so much easier said than done.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think anybody would want to label themselves a control freak, but in, I think, our most desperate moments, that's mm-hmm. what we are. We're mm-hmm. control freaks. Mm-hmm. And I think that surrender feels so easy to say mm-hmm. because it feels like nothing, right? Yeah. Like it's nothing.
Yeah.
And I'm wondering how you would understand like the relationship between like the work of surrender and mm-hmm. the actual action of surrender. Mm-hmm. Cause inherently surrendering is like nothing. Mm-hmm. If you surrender, that's like an unwork kind yeah. of situation. Yeah. Like it's not an effort, but yeah. it takes so much effort for us as Christians to actually surrender. So yeah. I'm wondering in your perspective, what's the balance between like work mm-hmm. in surrender and mm-hmm. not working in mm-hmm. surrender?
Yeah, that's a great question. Yeah. And that was one of the tensions I was trying to tease right. out, because in letting go, even just the language of let go, it's an embodied practice of letting go and not doing something. And yet you,
and then getting there takes work. It's frustrating.
Yeah. I actually wonder if part of getting surrender right is why we work.
Oh, interesting.
You know, like,
yeah.
it's not working towards something, it's working from
the idea of like a bottom line. But I hear you saying like surrender doesn't have a bottom line.
Hmm.
And that's kind of frustrating for us, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I just really am. And I talked about this with Melinda last week about like, there are some things in faith that you don't see the results of, and surrender might be one of those things,
yeah.
right?
Yeah. Yeah, we don't always get to know the end. We don't always get to see the fruit.
You don't always get the spoiler. There you go.
Yeah, yeah.
And so somebody listening to this right now, they might be holding on to that thing or have that something going on. Like, I know I need to surrender. What's like the first step of work they could take towards that posture?
I mean, if the first thing that comes to mind is just prayer, I think.
Yeah.
Asking God for the strength to let go. Mm. You know, asking God for even the wisdom for how to, like, if you're like, I don't really know how to surrender in this moment, reaching out for help. I mean, surrender acknowledges dependence. Mm. And so a first step into dependence is acknowledging you can't do it yourself.
Okay. That is profound. Why don't people, what do you think is the biggest hesitation people have before they admit that? Like, why do you think that? I mean, you know, I know, everybody knows, like everybody needs help.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody
mm-hmm.
has it all figured out.
Mm-hmm.
But if someone were to tell me to admit that, I think mm-hmm. I would resist that
mm-hmm.
even though I know it's true,
mm-hmm.
which I guess is another thing in surrender. But like, mm-hmm. why do you think that we don't ever want to just be open and admit that?
Because I think it makes us look weak.
Is surrender weak?
I don't think so. But in I think in some lenses it looks weak.
For sure.
Right?
Like in war. I mean,
yeah.
if you were
oh,
to,
yeah,
or 100%. Like in sports, like if you yeah. were to be playing another team, you're like, oh, they surrendered. They're like, okay, yeah. so you won?
Yeah. Yeah.
But in I guess I don't understand. I mean, it's hard for me to wrap my head around how it's different.
It's a surrender to God. So you're letting his strength actually lead. So it isn't weak because you're letting his strength take the lead.
And you're giving him the control.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's saying that, like, even as a control freak, I don't do a very good job controlling my own life.
Yeah. Yeah.
Do you find that people, when you think about surrender, it's mostly like a last resort? Like, I better do this because my life has come already this low.
I think for some people, that is how they get there. Is like you get to a point where, like, fine, I've tried everything else, you know. I do, I don't know if that's everyone's experience. I think we can develop rhythms in our lives that can make surrender more of a regular thing that we are accustomed to doing.
Okay, so what are some of those things?
So if we're talking about how I think of surrender, if surrender is acknowledging that I need God to take the lead, then for me, it's creating space in my life so that I am doing that. Like, I am aware that, listen, you're here, I can't do this. And so it's actually just creating space in my life so that I'm actually attentive to him in the middle of whatever I'm going through.
I'm so glad you said that. Creating space, I think, is maybe a little bit of a silver bullet here, where you're like, the more space, and I can speak to my own self, when I'm the most frustrated and I'm the most unhealthy in my responses, it's because I haven't taken time to breathe and to take a step away from the situation. But my big, probably like $2,000 philosophical question here that I'm really interested in your answer in is this idea of like creating space and our inherent resistance to it. Do you think that is a cultural thing? Like, our world pushes us to be busy? Or do you think that there is something inside of us that wants to be busy and we choose to be completely disconnected from our bodies in a lot of ways, completely disconnected from our heart in a lot of ways? It's like a chicken or egg-ish type question. Yeah. So I guess, so that's my question. Do you think this resistance to slow down and actually have a moment where we're looking and seeing, oh, I maybe need to surrender or breathe or just let God in, is that nature or is that nurture? That was a question that came up when you were preaching. I was like, okay, I really am curious, because you said, one of the quotes you said was, we think we have to work for what Jesus has already paid for. And I was thinking about this idea of work and like, okay, well, I mean, I'm a Protestant, so works based faith. I have a very strong reaction to that. And then I think about it, well, is that really how I feel? And then I thought to myself, well, let's think about surrender. How do I really feel about that? Is that something that my world has told me not to do? Or is that something that I've just resisted? Or is it both? So that's my question.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's probably a little both nature and nurture. I think we live in a very performance-based culture. That's really easy to take into our life with God too. And yet I think, it probably also feeds into how we're wired. Like, we want to please the people that we look up to. You know, I spent a lot of my life viewing God as an employer rather than a father or someone who loves and accepts me. And I think I spent way too many years thinking of him as like, oh, I have to do everything to make myself acceptable. And so my works were for that. And it took a long time for me to reorient. And I still can fall into that. Yes, I still want to work to please him, but I'm not doing it because I think I will lose my connection with him if I don't do it.
Yeah, it doesn't like add more into your account with God.
Right.
And that, I think, is one of the hardest things for 21st century American Christians to understand, because you're right. Yeah. We live in such a performative bottom line culture.
Yeah.
And the parts of faith, the parts of the Christian life that speak against that, they almost, and I don't mean this really, but they almost feel heretical. It almost feels like so out of left field that there are things in the Christian life that it's like surrender, let go, trust, abide, which we'll talk about in a second. To my brain and my heart, those feel too easy. Thus, they do not feel valid. Your sermon, as well organized as it is, and I think as well presented as it was, I think there are some inherent challenges. There's some real challenges in there for people when we really sit with this idea of surrender.
Yeah.
It's really hard and it's really, really challenging. Not just because, again, that nature nurture thing. It's not just because our world is so busy, but it's, I think there's a part of us that just doesn't feel like if we're just surrendering, we're actually connecting to God. At least that's how I feel. Maybe I'm just speaking for myself. Someone's already turned this off. They're like, I'm 500 yards past that guy. But I want to talk more about that idea of abide. Mm-hmm. Did you play Wordle yesterday?
I did. It was a for spoiler alert.
It's all, yeah, it's already
oh, yeah,
over.
It's over. It was yeah, a bide.
I thought about you.
I was so like, oh my gosh.
I thought that was crazy. I was like, this is, what are the chances?
Yeah.
What are the chances? But this idea of abide, is there a difference in your opinion? And I know that you defined abide in your sermon. Mm-hmm. Is there a difference between abide and surrender?
Oh, that's a great question. I mean, abide in its context in John 15 is remaining in Christ and Christ in you. I mean, it's fleshed out through obedience and love, and surrender, I suppose, fits within that. I don't know if it's exactly the same thing.
Is it like is abide an umbrella term for surrender?
Maybe.
Is surrender an umbrella term for abide?
Mm.
Two sides of the same coin.
You have to, it depends on how you're using surrender. If you have to surrender in order to abide.
Okay, what do you mean by that?
Okay, so going back into John 6, bread of life, Jesus is giving bread, and they're like, what must we do the works of God? And Jesus says, the work, singular, of God is this, believe.
Wow. Okay.
And that is an absolute theme throughout John. So believe is the response to Jesus we're all invited into. And I think what I've come to believe about the abiding metaphor is that what this is a snapshot of the believing life. So it's not just it's not the prayer that, you know, the prayer podcast we did,
wow.
Like pray to accept Jesus. It's not just like a one-time prayer and then you go on your merry way. It is I'm uniting myself to him. I believe and I'm never leaving. I'm abiding with Jesus forever. And I think as you live that out, it's a believing life. It is the life of belief.
So it's not just a one and done.
No.
And surrender is the same way. It's not just a one and done, but you can surrender like a once and for all, like a specific sin or situation.
Sure, yeah.
But that life, the surrendering life, the believing life, the abiding life, I really like that language a lot. That is a constant journey.
Yeah, and there's probably a first time you do it. So that's what I'm talking to.
Yeah.
Maybe it's the first time you are like, oh, okay, I'm in. But then you have to keep doing that.
And so that is, I guess, that's a really, really fertile ground to think about, like the surrendering life, the mm-hmm. abiding life.
Mm-hmm.
What marks that type of life?
Well, I just want to say fruit, because that's in the metaphor, but what marks it?
That's really funny. I that tickled my brain. That made me laugh. That was really good.
Like, what do you mean by marks it?
Like how would you know?
If you are. I'm not the judge.
Hmm.
I don't know. I mean, I hope that everything that I am banking my life on is...
Fingers crossed.
True.
Yeah. I hope it is.
I mean, I believe it's all true.
Yeah.
I'm living according to the word to the best that I have been given, you know?
And even that sentence, even the way that you framed that is a surrender, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like you're surrendering what you think the right, quote, right way is to live.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's a huge piece of surrendering, abiding, is to recognize that the frame of reference that you have presented and made for yourself is maybe not the ultimate way. And you have to surrender that.
Mm-hmm.
But again, I wonder if it's our culture that tells mm-hmm. us that mm-hmm. our way is the best, or we have this thing inside of us that says, no, your way is the best.
Yeah.
If only there was a story in the Bible where someone's like, you should try to be like God and
yeah.
determine good and evil for yourself. But I don't think that story exists at all. Okay, this is really fascinating. And the idea of abide, I know, is really important to you,
uh-huh.
really important to your work and also to your life. And I wonder, when you hear the word abide, how have you in your life tried to live a, quote, abiding life?
Okay, well, the first thing that comes to my mind is my running life.
Okay, let's go. Let's talk about that for 4 hours.
That is my abiding rhythm. I think that is like the rhythm for like other people are like, let's go running together. Let's join a running club. And I'm like, nope, I don't want to run with anyone because that's my time to listen, to be like with, like that's how I picture myself with God is running. And it's my time to listen. It's the time where if I hear anything that the Spirit is saying to me, it's then.
So some people would hear that and be like, well, I run in community and I can hear in community.
Yeah, and maybe they can.
And so abiding looks different in
that
sense. Yeah,
totally.
But
totally.
Your life, it's the running life.
For me, that's the rhythm that I've set up for this season anyway. As long as my body will do it, this is what I've been doing.
I should pick up running. That sounds fun. So it's a different rhythm for different people, but it's intentionality.
Yeah.
You have to build it in.
Yeah.
Does it ever feel like it's too much? You're like, I can't run today.
Oh yeah. I mean, I don't do it every single day in that way. I do have time every morning where I sit down, most every morning where I sit down and with a journal and It's sometimes like 3 minutes and it's sometimes 20 minutes and it just depends. And then I have times throughout the day where I'm just like breath, like Jesus. Like whenever I have the thoughts that come in about that, you know, you get the assaulting thoughts of doubt that assault, like they will assault me. They are words that attack my sense of well-being or my state of like, it's okay. Mm-hmm. And I literally in response will cry, will like breathe, Jesus, like take control of this. It just comes out of me.
I think that's the mark of an abiding life though, where more times than not, your reaction to something like that is to reroot yourself in that moment. And I think that's what I'm trying to get out of like surrender, abide. All of these things are, the one and done, but they're also patterns that you build into your life and you also build into other things that help remind you a lot like a muscle. And it's interesting how this is really paired to fasting because fasting in the same way, it's like the next time you're hungry, you can remember the season where you did the food fast and you're like, oh, I got that from God or I heard that word from him, which I really like. And again, this idea of layers, we want people to choose something.
Yeah.
And I think like we were talking before, surrendering is like, it's in every layer.
Mm-hmm.
You can get to the deepest part and there's something to surrender. And then on the surface, there's something you have to surrender. Mm-hmm. And I loved your image of the vineyard.
Mm-hmm.
And I like something that you said, and I don't even know if this was something that like you meant to say or it was in your notes, but like you can hold both. You can hold the reality of the vineyard and the reality of your chaotic life in tension.
Mm-hmm.
So for someone listening, explain a little bit more about like how someone can sit in both or sit with both.
Yeah. I mean, I think, I mean, it's kind of like, it's exactly, we did that exercise of just trying to picture the peaceful vineyard of, and to think of it as yourself abiding with Jesus and your position with him is secure. And that is true alongside of whatever you're going through, whether it's a boring old day at work or whatever crisis you might be going through. Like these are both true at the same time. And maybe that's, you know, my way of those breath prayers out to God in the middle of these thoughts that will come to me, like, is that it's this reminder, like he's here. With surrender for me, as I think about it, I think it goes back to this practice of the presence of God. It's like you're reminding yourself however you need to do it, that God is near in every circumstance. So that whole holding together the abiding scene with whatever's going on in your life is a realization that God is present. And that you're okay, and that you're going to be okay, even in the middle of not being okay, even if the bottom falls out, even if whatever happens, that he's near and it's okay. I mean, that's a hard truth to tell yourself when things really are going south, but I think that's what we're talking about.
Yes. So. And the more that you can do that in moments when the bottom hasn't fallen out quite yet.
Yeah.
The easier it will be for you in that moment to go back to that a little bit like a muscle, you know, I can push myself in the moments I need to push myself because I have before this moment taken the time to really cultivate this in my life.
Yeah.
And I think that's what you're saying about the abiding, the surrendering life.
Mm-hmm.
I really love that. And I really think that's a really easy thing to invite people into thinking about. Like, and I wanted to ask you, what is your vineyard? What is your peaceful picture that you put in the midst of a busy day?
That's a good question. I mean, I just think in images, that's kind of how I structured the sermon was like, here's this image, here's that image, here's this image.
Yeah, a lot of images.
Yeah.
I actually think you were probably the first person to play a video in one of the coastline
sermons. Oh, really?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, and I mean, it taps into the sensory stuff that I've been doing in my research, but I have a picture of, again, it's a water thing. And I'm not, I was joking, like I'm really not a water person. I don't like to get wet that much. Sitting up on that wall on like by the beach.
Like the Esplanade.
The Esplanade. Yeah. Like sitting up on that wall just next to Jesus. That's like a place where I don't like I don't remember where I was, but I had a picture, like a image of that come to mind maybe in prayer. And it was just a sitting side by side watching the waves. And it's just peace. Like it's okay. Everything's okay. Mm. I spent so many years with a different picture and it was scurrying around trying to bring gifts to him to please him. Like that, like that's the other image. I think I spent so many years feeling like I had to bring him enough gifts in a day to be okay. And that's been replaced for the most part. But that's, I think, how I lived a lot of my life before it kind of reshaped to being more peaceful.
And would you say that image, that previous one of like bringing gifts and stuff, would you, how would you classify that? Would that be like incorrect? Would that be like wrong?
I maybe just got the order wrong, you know, like a performance. It was a very performance-based approach to God. If I could bring in, when you think, I think, you know, we talk about grace, the grace of God. And I think for a long time, this brings in John Barclay, like the, for a long time, we've thought about the concept of grace. For it is by grace you have been saved through faith. And we've thought about, oh, it's like this pure gift that nobody deserves and no response is required. And he actually does this work in the text to say, actually, gifts in the ancient world were circular. They weren't non-circular. Like we think, you're going to scratch all this from the, would you just edit all this out? Yeah, no, you have to, because I wasn't prepared to say this. The modern notion of a pure gift is a gift that is given and you don't expect a return. And I think we think that that is what the gift of salvation is. Like, I'm going to give it to you and you don't have to do anything in response. But I think in actuality, when you think about gift in its ancient context, a gift was given with an expectation of reciprocity. And I think in the context of how Paul is using it, it's a gift that God gives to develop relationship. And so what do we do with those gifts that we bring to him? Like, I'm still bringing him gifts, but it's not to earn his favor. It's because he's favored me. And because it's the order. It's, I want to please him because I love him, because he loves me, and not because I'm trying to earn it.
So in this surrendering life, what are the gifts?
That's a great question. I mean, I think it's anything you do in response to him. I think it's your work. It's your service. It's, you know, we, as it relates to specifically relating to God, it was in the metaphor of the chocolate milk. It's the stirring the spoon. So if you're stirring that, that's the space you're creating to be with God. It's prayer. It's the layers prayer. It's spiritual direction. It's worship. It's fasting. It's whatever you are doing to create space to be with him more.
That's the gifts you're bringing. And it's not out of this, oh, you're going to love me more and do more for me. It's because the reciprocity here is relationship.
Mm-hmm. It's relationship.
And I think that's a really compelling image of surrender. Mm-hmm. I don't think a vision of surrender, if I'm going to give God everything in hopes that my life changes or is better, I don't think that's a very compelling image, because like that's every relationship we have. Mm-hmm. If you're in a relationship with somebody and you bring them more, mm-hmm. it's pretty much guaranteed you're going to get more out of the relationship. They're going to give you more. With God, it's less about him making your life go the way you want it to go and mm-hmm. more about rooting you in him, mm-hmm. which is then that perspective shift of I can hold both. I can hold mm-hmm. the chaos of my life and the beauty of the vineyard mm-hmm. and nothing changes. The chaos mm-hmm. doesn't dissipate and the vineyard doesn't become more present. It's, I have a better perspective because I have more relationship with you. I've brought more of myself to surrender and gotten more in return.
Yeah.
That's beautiful. That's a good image. And I think that is something that would really compel someone to be like, yes, I want that. Mm-hmm. I want that life. I want to live the life that is marked by surrender. Mm-hmm. And I guess my last question is to kind of go against everything I've said here is the bottom line of surrender. You know, we talked with Melinda last week about fasting. Like, mm-hmm. how do you know fasting worked? How do you know surrendering worked? Mm-hmm. How do you know that your things, your gifts that you've brought or the things that you've surrendered, it's made a difference?
If I'm just going back into scripture, it's back to fruit bearing. Like what, how does it show up? Do you love God more than you did yesterday?
That's great.
Yeah.
That's really good.
If you take an example of fasting, for example, I mean, you could give yourself over to fast and have a terrible experience and not hear anything from the Lord and not see fruit of that until a decade later.
Right.
How do you know that you did it right?
Exactly.
I don't know. You, okay, Lord, well, this is what I've offered. And you know, in good faith, I trust that he knows my heart in the middle of whatever I'm doing, even if it looks like a complete failure.
And then the same thing goes for surrendering, I guess. Like,
right.
how do you know it worked if you feel like you gave something up, but you're still like feeling it? You know, mm-hmm. that was my question. Cause I think listening to your sermon and ending it with the Blair's Prayer and with Melinda, who was just talking about fasting, like I was thinking to myself, like, okay, I listened to this sermon and I want to surrender. How do I know it's mm-hmm. like worth it? Mm-hmm. And I think you answered about like the reciprocity of relationship. Mm-hmm. Like you get to be with God. Mm-hmm. And the question is, does that matter? Mm-hmm. Is that important to you?
Yeah.
And I don't know. I mean, that's, everybody's got to answer that for themselves.
Yeah,
but like you said, right. You're not the judge. I'm not the judge.
No. Nope.
Way out of my pay grade to tell people if it matters to them or not.
Yeah.
Yeah. A lot of really, really good thoughts coming out of your sermon. I want to end with this. You mentioned a guy named John Barclay, which actually is a great transition to what I want to ask you,
yes.
which is, your published works.
Oh.
You are, I think, Coastline's first published theological author. I could be wrong
about that.
I guess in the upper echelons of Coastline. What has that process been like to like write something? Mm-hmm. And I think that maybe there's even a little bit of a connection in what you've been talking about at Coastline, like the sensory stuff. Mm-hmm. So I guess it's a little bit of a plug, but it's also like a journey mm-hmm. to becoming this author. I know you have a book out and a book coming out. And so I just want to know, like, how has that been? How have you been mm-hmm. feeling? And I guess the $1 million question is, how can Coastline support you as a writer?
Well, the first, the book that came out, which was my published thesis, is out. That was, I mean, the fruit of a bunch of years of research. And so I'm just really grateful. It was definitely a labor of love and a lot of life. So yeah, I'm super grateful for that.
Just hold on, it's jumping in really quick. I think about a lot of bands and artists that like their first album is like the culmination of their mm-hmm. whole life up into their first album. And then mm-hmm. that's why there's like the sophomore slump, because it's instead of like having, you know, X amount of years to make a debut album, they only have like two to make a second one. So this first one was a labor of love.
Yeah.
It's the second one feel a little bit more monotonous? Does it feel a little bit more like work?
The second one was really fun to write because it's one that I'm hoping to use in my classes. I'm planning mm-hmm. to use it in my New Testament classes. It's one that's going to be available to, like, the first one you can buy and you can read it, but it's kind of a, you know, libraries will pick it up. It'll be used in research. This next one
is more academic.
It's more academic. This one is, it's got a lot more story in it. It's a lot less technical. It's really the reason that I got into the research I did. It's like, it's fueled the research that I did, but it's also like the payoff. Like it's the, okay, the title is Engaging Jesus with Our Senses, and it's ordered according to the senses. It's looking at the Gospels through sight, hearing, smell, taste, touch.
As you wrote, did you put your knowledge into the book, or did you learn alongside the writing of the book?
Both. It was both. Part of how I figure out what I think is by writing. I've learned. I think that's for a lot of writers. Like, you write to figure out what you think about something. So it was kind of an exercise of both. It was the fruit of the first book, but it was applied more broadly to the Gospels, which I think is going to make it a little bit even more of a broader appeal, because it's not just in John, it's in Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John.
Was that hard for you to get out of John for a bit?
It was refreshing, actually. It was really nice.
Like when Garrick's like, hey, you're preaching out of John. You're like, no, I don't want to do that.
Never again.
Never again. It will never happen again. I can almost promise you. I don't make those sermon series. They'll just tell you what to do and you got to do it. Where could people find it?
It is available for pre-order on Amazon.com. .com, and it releases on August 27th. It was going to be October 1st and it got bumped up because I said, can I use it in my classroom this fall? And they were like, yes. So they're going to.
So August 27th.
August 27th.
We'll have to do a episode where we talk about it. I would love to read it.
Yeah.
I have to get my hands on a copy. I'll read it and then we'll do, I don't know, maybe I'll just like get somebody else to come on and just like grill you about your book. Just like, what do you mean by this?
Yeah.
And you don't have to answer that question. No, I'm excited. So Coastline, if you're listening, the pastoral push that you have from me is to go on Amazon, pre-order Janine's book, and we'll do something fun along the way. But congratulations. That's huge. And I was thinking a lot about you in your sermon and how much work I know you have put into everything that you do.
Yeah.
And I hope that preaching and being able to speak is life-giving.
Because
I know it blesses so many people. I loved your sermon. It is very rare that I will listen to a sermon and have so much that I want to engage with. And I'm so lucky in my job because I get to sit here with you and have these conversations. So thank you, Janine, for coming, answering all my questions. And I am very excited for your book.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Who designed the cover?
You know, it's a piece of artwork from, it's a Art Deco piece in like Washington, D.C. or something like that. So it's just like an excerpt from it.
Nice.
And it's Mary at the resurrection. Magdalene touching Jesus. So it's like their hand, like her hand in his hand or something like that.
That's
so
very cool.
It's very cool. I really love the cover.
Well, I asked, and I don't know why I asked, because this is an audio medium. No one knows what you're talking about.
Yeah.
I have to go. But yeah, that's another reason for you to go on Amazon and pre-order it so you can see the cover.
Yeah, yeah.
So that's great. All right, Janine, Dr. Hanger, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. Yeah. And we'll see you next week, I guess, and every single week after that. I haven't said that in a long time.